The Kakadu plum is an Australian native superfood containing 100 times more vitamin C than oranges. So why have you never heard of it? PR. No one's drinking a Kakadu smoothie? I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward, inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey fam, I'm Simone Boyce.
I'm Danielle Robay.
And we're the hosts of The Bright Side, the podcast from Hello Sunshine that's guaranteed to light up your day.
Like our recent episode with sisters Regina and Raina King about the why behind their production company, Royal Ties.
We have such a huge love for storytelling without walls, without barriers.
Listen to The Bright Side from Hello Sunshine on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
There is nothing. Your consciousness is but a single grain of malt.
But I'd like to wake up. But I'd like to wake up, wouldn't I?
Too bad. Because one-upsmanship is upon you like a black tide.
Send me back to the ether.
Fuck you little booger.
Hey, everyone.
Yeah. We're doing that.
We're doing some voice acting over here on One-Upsmanship. I'm one of your hosts, the Limbic System.
Oh, I thought you were the ancient reptilian brain.
Oh, maybe I'm the ancient reptilian brain. Yes. I'm Michael Swaim. Reptilian brain rhymes better.
I was playing the pathetic Limbic System, Adam Ganser, a transitional voice, really.
Yeah, and this may be the only episode of One-Upsmanship where we will have occasion to discuss parts work, the therapeutic methodology, because we're talking about Disco fucking Elysium.
Yeah.
A real mind trip head fuck of a game.
Yep.
I think fair to say whether we do or don't end up liking it, unlike 99% of games you've ever played. And we'll explain why. And it's one you likely haven't, maybe if you're a casual gamer, heard of. It's a little more double A than the shit we usually cover.
I think the news about this game got out, though. Like, I feel like it's even a little bit more known than, say, like Hollow Knight, right?
Which, yeah.
It's in that range.
I just like to point out when we cover an indie, because you'd be surprised how many people write in and are like, I barely play video games anymore because I'm in my 30s, but I still love the show. And that type of person probably was like caring for children instead of hearing about Disco Elysium. You know?
Right. Yeah, that's probably right. That person had a mortgage instead of what we're doing.
So let's see. Well, let's pass a checkpoint.
Absolutely.
Which would mean
we're in the speed run. Wherein we do
I was trying to think of what a checkpoint would be in the case of Disco Elysium.
I mean, you'd roll some dice.
Yeah.
Right? You roll some dice.
I sat on a bench despite Lieutenant Ken Kitsuragi's explicit admonishments not to. And the game autosaved. So who has the honor, the pleasure of trying to describe Disco Elysium in a nutshell?
I would like to give it to you, but I'll take it if you want to challenge me.
No, I want it. I was going to ask.
Great. Great.
I was going to say, like, I'll flip you for it because, like, I want it so bad.
No, it's all yours, sir. Please, all right. Feel free.
Well, you know what that means. I can't start the clock and do the speed run.
So for the second time ever.
Yep.
Start the clock.
Disco Elysium. Elysium, it turns out, if you get deep into the game and find out, is a name for the world in which this game takes place. And disco is the name of a brand of music that defined an era that represented hope in the main character's life. Disco Elysium, what is it? Well, it's part visual novel, part classic RPG, meaning that you have a bunch of stats that you can level up, but by and large there is no combat system, period, which differentiates it from a traditional RPG. By and large, all you're doing is the conversational component of a classic RPG, meaning you get involved in these long conversations and you roll dice to determine the outcome of various conversational tactics. And furthermore, all of your underlying stats, of which there are I think 20 various stats you can manage, have to do with the way you act in conversation, the behavioral palette available to you in conversation. There are some physical challenges like lifting a weight or jumping over a chasm, but again, if you're familiar with Dungeons & Dragons system, it's basically just a check system and an attribute system, and that's all you get. Other than that, it's a very unique art style, and it is a visual novel, so to speak, with these light RPG elements that I would describe as if Thomas Pynchon made a video game, the kind of video game I never thought would exist. It's part hard-boiled detective novel, part apocalyptic transhumanist fiction, part psychedelia like Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance, Thomas Pynchon-esque, trippy bullshit. It's a very unique mix, but at its heart, it is a murder mystery. You play an amnesiac, broken-down, alcoholic, divorced cop who wakes up from having drunk so much that he's completely blotted out his memory, only to discover that he is a cop assigned to a murder case, and then you go about solving the murder case, and that is it. That's Disco Elysium. Stop the clock.
I mean, excellent speedrun. I can't believe how complex you were able to get in your summary here, because it is an extraordinarily complex game to summarize, I find.
I found that my window into it was parts work. When I understood that everything... So that's what's so cool about the game is how obtuse it is at first.
Yes.
All I can compare it to is a novel, because that's what a novel feels like. When you're dropped in to a good epic novel and it's like, this character did this, and you're like, I don't even know what that's in reference to, but I'm sure I'll find out through context as the novel progresses. When this game starts, you're like, I'm literally just looking at a black screen and someone's saying very highfalutin words.
Yeah.
What is this game?
And they then when the nothingness, yeah. Oh God,
and
so
then
good.
It'll say like, okay, now you got a skill point. Do you want to put it in Shivers or Inland Empire?
And you're, right. Like, so you're like, what the fuck is that?
Yeah. What are you talking about?
Yeah,
and
yeah,
it says,
yeah.
Listen, this is an RPG, dude. You have to decide. Do you want to think about the White Death and see what attributes that tweaks in your thought cabinet? And you're like, I don't know what you mean.
Yep.
If this game is the opposite of spoon feeding itself to you. I'm excited.
I'm going to do a rare format break here.
We've broken it. We should be ranting.
That's what I'm saying. I think we're going to pass a checkpoint. Mm-hmm. And you're already halfway into a rant. So, sir, carry us forward. Usually the other player goes, but this time you're already halfway there. And I'm intrigued. Please rant for us.
Well, my rant is that I actually want to save, I think, the key anecdote of my actual gameplay experience for Game On. But
right.
when it comes to ranting, I will just say that this is essentially a novel plus a soundtrack plus a book of beautiful artwork. And those are three of my favorite things. Thanks to this game, I am now obsessed with the band British Sea Power, who did the soundtrack. Immediately looked them up and was like, I don't want to hear this music just when I'm playing this game. I want to hear this music all the time. and then as art, it is very it's very painterly. It borrows from, there's a lot of Van Gogh influence in the way the just visually that it's painted. And Van Gogh is absolutely hands down my favorite painter. So
yeah,
it's, and then that's funny because in the last episode I said it was Zhidzhila Bekshinsky, but surrealist wise, of the classical painters that are in museums that you learned about in school, Van Gogh is my guy. And there's a lot of Van Gogh to it, the visual. So you got the music, which is melancholy and kicks ass. You got the visuals, which are very painterly in a way that you do not see in video games very often. Like each portrait of each character you meet, their portrait was a joy to behold. I was like, I love the way Gart, his headshot looks. I fucking yeah. love the way various headshots were painted. And then ultimately the third thing is the content of the game itself, which is essentially a psychedelic hard-boiled post-apocalyptic detective novel that is full of heartbreak and also beautiful statements of humanistic hope. Like the game ends with the statement, "Mankind, we loved you, like carry on," or something like that. And the thing that gets painted in French on the street after mm-hmm. the big shootout, it translates to like, "And I will walk beside you once more." There's all this arcane, obscure, incredibly imaginative, unique things about the ephemeral nature of life and beauty and wonder. And as a novel, the story part broke my heart and is one of my favorite. It's like, I feel bad having used flowery, gushing language on this show before, because when we talk about from time to time the mission of this show being, what if we held game storytelling to the standards that we hold film to and yeah. novels to? This passes that test. The writing, sentence to sentence, is actually not just competent, but interesting and transcendently good. And you can tell that the artists behind this game strove to the point of heartbreak to try and explain the mystery and beauty of the universe, and they fucking nailed it. It is a breathtaking work of staggering genius. That is my rant.
Yeah. Yeah, I suspected you might say all that. Player two, Adam Ganser, plug it in. I streamed this game from start to finish. I've rarely ever...
Sorry to interrupt, but hey, just for housekeeping's sake, where yeah. could people go watch those archived if they wanted to?
Oh, I don't post my archived streams.
Never mind.
I apologize.
Thought
that
would have been useful, trying to boost you up.
And I really appreciate that. I might reconsider, but I also... yeah, there's reasons why I don't post my
archives. So it was ephemeral. They missed it.
Yes. Yeah. I try to make it a live performance kind of a thing if I can. Anyway, sorry for that. But I did stream it start to finish. I have rarely, maybe never, had the kind of pleasure in video game text that I had in this game. The writing in it, on a sentence level, on a grammar, sentence, and word choice level, is so affecting and entrancing, and there's an intoxication to it. And it's one of the rare times that I clicked every single dialogue option I could possibly get, every single one, because I just enjoyed it that much. Even if it wasn't really advancing the story that much, it was really just sort of... advancing the texture of this place, because my God, does this place have texture. The city of Revachol is one of the most textured fictional places in any medium that I've ever played or seen or read, ever.
The history is so deep.
The history is incredibly deep. The meaning behind things, incredibly robust and rich. The nature of your interactions starts to sort of bloom like an onion after you've been around in the place for a while. Now, it has a hilarious but also convenient sort of opening premise, which is that you, as the primary detective, are a debilitated alcoholic and drug addict, as in like you are waking up from a bender that's so bad that you don't remember anything about who you are or what happened or why you're here. And so one of the mysteries, if not the primary mystery that you're trying to solve, is sort of who are you and why did this happen? And then you're also solving a murder mystery that is kind of leading you into these intricate observations of the town. And, you know, we've spent a lot of time describing what the game is. I'll just say this. I probably put 30, 40 hours into this game. I enjoyed all of the hours. I enjoyed the themes and the characters. The character of Kim is one of the best video game characters in history. He ranks somewhere in that list. If I had to make a list, he'd be in there. Like,
I worship Ken Kitsuragi.
Yeah, just an incredibly written character, an incredibly performed character. As the actor nailed it. So much humanity, so much fun. So I've said a lot of gushing positive things. Now let me say some things that are the truth about this game. I think it's tedious. I think it's really tedious a lot of times. I think the detective story is not that well written. As in, like, I don't think that the actual mystery is very good, and I don't think the solution to that mystery is very compelling. And that's just, like, the macro story of it is not that good. The intimacy of it, the detail and the experience of it, so much better than any game I can think of. But overall, it's not that good at being a detective story. That's a big problem. And we're going to talk about this later, I'm sure. But, like, I played this on PS5, which means that I got the port, the final cut, the port. And I played it right when it came out. And it was the worst port I've ever played. It was as bad as Cyberpunk in terms of its glitchiness. Like, there were whole sections of story I could not access because of broken links. The game kicked me out like probably about 10 times. I had to reboot my stream a bunch of times because of it. It was a really janky port, and I have sympathy for the team that made this because I know that it's a heartbreaking work of genius. I know that there's a lot of passion in a small team.
And you know that the game design team represented within this game are a clear metaphor for them.
Yes.
And they talk about how they ran out of money, they couldn't do as much as they wanted. Literally within the game is a narrative about game designers biting off
more than
they can
chew. Where
they're
trying to do all this stuff. Yeah. Yes. And I did have, again, I have pity for them, and I bought their game, and I don't regret buying their game, and I don't regret endorsing their game, but it was broken. It was really broken. And it did dramatically alter the experience of it for the worse. And, like, that's the truth. So, sorry. And it's going to impact how I feel about the game overall, because it did. Just like Cyberpunk, I wasn't as mad at the glitches because I didn't have as many of them. You know? So, if I'd had them, I'd probably have been pretty mad. So, there's that. I think that's a pretty good launch. Oh, okay. There's one last thing. I want to say it now so we can talk about it. I don't care about the geopolitical ramifications of this fictional city. I don't care. I don't care about, am I an individualist? Am I a humanist? Am I a communist? Or am I a libertarian? Like, that dilemma that was sort of soaked through all these things that this game insisted on me listening to hours of people's opinions about, I don't care. And I'll tell you why I don't care. This is not an analogous town to my living situation or anyone's living situation in America. It's not a very good political commentary because it doesn't really apply. It's really just sort of a weird abstraction on politics. And, like, I don't find that interesting because this is the 1800s. We're not having an intellectual conversation around a bar about the value of human liberty or about the need of the government to meet. Like we're not having talks about socialism in that context. We're having it in the context that's a lot more about social justice and stuff. And I don't really think this game did that very well to a point where I found it frustrating. And you may wildly disagree with that, but I genuinely found it frustrating because it doesn't stack up one-to-one. And that's my rant.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey guys, I'm home.
Everyone knows that it's Dad's job to be a bit of a joker.
Sorry I'm late, everyone. There was an accident at the factory. Monty fell into the upholstery machine. Don't worry though, he's fully recovered.
Good one, Dad.
Did you get the pizza for dinner?
So he likes to keep everyone happy with some dad jokes.
Yep, right here. I had a coupon, and it saved me a lot of dough.
Well, the truth is, Dad is just a fun guy.
Hey, I'm not a mushroom.
Please stop. Where does he get these stupid jokes from?
He listens to the Daily Dad Jokes podcast.
Oh, great. More dad jokes for me.
We've delivered over 15,000 jokes to over 3 million listeners, and man, the postage fees are killing us. Listen to the Daily Dad Jokes podcast every day on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robey,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
Thank you for taking the light, and you're going to shine it all over the world, and it makes me really happy.
I never imagined that I would get the chance to carry this honor and help be a part of this legacy.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
Did I already do my rant?
You did, and it was beautiful. It was it was basic. I should have gotten
second
because you wanted to respond. I trapped you.
I feel like you just made it so people who hear this won't play the game.
No, I didn't.
And I think I gave him the wrong call.
No, I gave him both experiences.
Was the game on?
Yeah, of course.
Okay, so we passed the checkpoint. Game on. I will tell my anecdote now, which is that I was playing it on console as well right when it came out, and I think in fairness to the developers' passion and the thing they made, we should state that we both played it right when the port came out.
Yes, we did.
They've been very apologetic. They've been scrambling over themselves. There have now been 5 new patches since the time we played, and my understanding is the game is fully functional now. That's about 2 months out from release. But if you played in that two-month window...
It's one month from release.
It came out. Yeah. Then there's a particular experience you got, and I also got that experience, which is, I'll just put it this way, because this is the way to put it compellingly, and I'm amazing at storytelling. My girlfriend came down from the office one day to find me having blown off the second half of my workday to play Disco Elysium some more, which I was doing a lot lately, and only to find me with tears in my eyes sitting, looking very depressed. And I'm someone who... is prone to mood swings, and when I get really depressed, I engage in like self-harm and shit, and so she has her antenna out for when I'm depressed, so she saw the look in my face and was worried I was like something was really wrong. Of course, I'll say you at ease now, nothing was really wrong, but I just want to compare it to the depth of sadness I felt was genuine. My girlfriend was like, is something wrong? What's wrong? What happened? And I'm like, you don't play video games, and you don't care about storytelling as much as I do, so it's hard for me to explain in a way that you won't laugh at me. But the way I put it was, imagine you were watching Casablanca for the first time, and it was 20 hours long.
Yeah.
And at hour 18, they pushed you out of the theater and said, it's over, Casablanca's over. Reached a point that I realized from Googling I could not progress, and it broke my heart to not be able to finish this thing and to not be able to finish it right now. But like, I'm on the edge of my seat now. I'm fully invested in the thing now, and I had to go online and just watch the ending on YouTube, and that really fucking sucked. I have the same port problem Adam did, and it really sucks. I can't like overstate how cheated I felt of the experience.
Well, and can we, I mean, we're here now, so I guess I just want to dig in on this issue now to put this stuff behind us.
But in order to present both opinions, I have to say I was biting my tongue, though, when you say it's tedious. I was completely on my edge of my seat the whole time, and I completely disagree. I think it's a biting geopolitical satire that is like spot on and one of the best political statements we've had in a long time, and I'm sure we'll unpack that, but it must be known that I disagree.
Okay, understood. That's fine.
But I agree on the port issue completely.
Yeah. I didn't think the port issue would be controversial. I guess I should say, to start the political piece of this.
Oh, and I think it's a great detective story with a very satisfying reveal. Oh, I really don't.
So you know how it resolves, right?
It resolves with you finding the cryptid.
Yes, and which
discovering
I genuinely
the nature
liked.
Of
yes.
the whole in reality.
Does everybody get the cryptid? Do you have to have done those quests to get the cryptid?
My understanding is the cryptid always appears, even if you haven't done those quests, then you just don't know what the fuck is going on while it's happening,
the cryptid.
Which is also funny.
Yeah.
I think maybe I'm misjudging your characterization, but it feels like you're holding up to a classic noir, meaning like the ending should have been a reveal that goes, they did it. I should have seen it the whole time.
Yes.
Whereas I would describe this more as an acid-soaked Thomas Pynchon hardboiled detective story. And those traditionally end with not who did it, but with something out of left field that is a symbol for what the story was about. And the cryptid did that. In its way, it was a very traditional, like, psychedelic Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance mystery.
And I can fully nod at that. Yep, okay, I get it.
That is a subgenre of detective stories.
Sure.
It's like the beat
poet.
That's
not really the best way to do a game. Because in a game, I want to feel like the choices that I make lead to revelations and understanding, and this did not.
What if the point of the game was to explore something that seems true to me, which is that life is too complex for you to ever know the answer? And
that's not what this game is saying, though. If it was saying that, I would be like, sure, but that's not what it's saying.
I think that's one of the core messages of the game, is that there's no solution to the mystery, just like in real life.
But there is a solution. You know exactly what
happened. But the answer only ties... Right, but you never understand if the... There's an implication that the pheromones from the cryptid may have driven the guy insane.
Sure.
But it's equally plausible that the guy just... It's like the novel, The Stranger.
That he just went insane from the situation.
That day, for years and years, he spied on the people of the town through his scope. That day, seeing that woman get fucked in that hotel just triggered him in a way where he pulled the trigger that day. Now, the fact that it could be that, or it could be the pheromones from the cryptid, to me, is a perfect... They're giving you the answer that is there's two equally plausible answers and you'll never know which one is accurate. It's the Schrodinger's cat ending, which to me is a valid ending to a detective story.
I'm not saying it's not valid. So like let's take the idea of, is this allowed to be called a detective story? 100%. Does it fit into a genre of detective story?
But what makes it unsatisfying to you? I want to hear your
Because
thoughts.
My choices don't matter. It's as simple as that. My choices don't matter. And fortunately for this game, I played and like soaked up every single quest I could do. So the cryptid thing was actually very satisfying. Like it was like, oh shit, that's really cool. But it's also a 30-minute, unskippable, unsavable diatribe from a character you don't know, don't care about, talking about things that do not matter to what you've been exploring, other than like they are geopolitical texture to this world.
They matter because he is the human manifestation of a geopolitical school of thought, and you were supposed
He's one of them. He's not the only
he's
one.
He's one of them. Right. Yeah. He represents the hammer and sickle dyed-in-the-wool communist belief. I suspect, or this is how I took it, I suspect you're supposed to be... I thought the game did a good job of laying out the basics of different schools of geopolitical thought.
It did do
and
that.
And the benefits and deep flaws of all of them.
It did that
and
too.
And I suspect you were supposed to spend a bunch of the time thinking to yourself, which one do I believe is best? And that's a question I ask myself frequently, and the answer changes as my life goes on. And
sure,
I never tire of thinking about it, so it felt very relevant in the sense of, like, if someone gave you a game or a book or a thing called, you know, geopolitical satire, that was the title, you wouldn't go, you could say, I don't care about that, but then don't read that book. I'm just saying this game includes geopolitical content. If that's not your cup of tea, then you won't like it. If it is, you will.
I like geopolitical content. I like it in essays. I like it in sometimes I like it in novels. I'm not opposed to it being in this game either. Like, I don't think it's intrinsically bad. I didn't like it.
It's just the thought experiment of, like, what is the most just form of society and organizing power?
I'm of the opinion, and, you know, some people probably disagree. I'm sure a lot of people who are going to weigh in, the people who are going to talk on this episode, will all disagree with me. I'm sure about that. But, like, I don't think that makes a very compelling story. I think those elements being an informer of the story, or being a subtext of the story, or sometimes being the text of the story as an obfuscation, are all interesting ways to do that. And I've read lots of novels or, you know, essays or whatever where I found this kind of stuff engaging. For instance, one of the things this kind of reminds me of is The Brothers Karamazov. Have you read The Brothers Karamazov? Are you familiar mm-hmm. with that? So, mm-hmm. like, that's a novel where there are 100-page sort of shoot-off conversations, right? And some of those shoot-offs are offshoots or whatever, are fantastic. Like The Grand Inquisitor, right? Or most of the stuff that the Atheist Brother says is sort of very philosophical and detached from the narrative.
Right. But if one doesn't hit, you're stuck in it for a long time and it feels tedious.
And that's the that's the problem with this game. That's the problem. Is that, like, as a game...
I can't name a single interaction that I didn't find richly rewarding.
Oh, I can. I can't think. I'm ready. I'm ready for you. So
the dice maker? Yeah. Who sucked?
Measurehead sucked. I hated Measurehead.
Well, but someone has to represent virulent racism. That is a geopolitical school of thought that is vibrant right now.
I understand. But, like, the argument cannot be right. But also, that's not how racism is being depicted right now. That's the problem I have with it.
Right, he was depicted as a classic, like, genetic inferiority,
right, like an
1800s
guy. It's like he's arguing about brain size and stuff. It's like, nobody's making that argument anymore. That's why it's like he's a phrenologist. That's why I'm like, what are we doing here? This is nonsense.
State of that,
right? And that's what. And the last guy is an 1800s communist, and it's like, these are not real points of view anymore. Like, do they represent philosophical underpinnings? Yes, completely.
Yes, you just cited The Brothers Karamazov as if that's still relevant to imbibe that story. So why is that different?
It matters because...
That's literally the 1800s.
It is. I totally agree. I don't think that just because something's old makes it irrelevant. I'm the exact opposite.
Exactly. That's what that's the position I'm forcing you into.
I appreciate that. But I think as a compelling way to deal with schools of thought, like, because that's what it is. It's we're not engaging with, like, man, the cost or reality or the application of communism. We're not dealing with, like, the like any of that. We're dealing with it as a kind of weird thought experiment in a fictional place that doesn't resemble ours.
And it's a Rorschach test of exploring how you, the player, emotionally react to each, like,
which it does that well
here. You meet a really friendly communist. That makes communism seem appealing. Yeah. Then you meet the Hardy Boys who are willing to kill someone for the sake of communism. Ah, now you feel complex instead.
And I like that.
I just
appreciate
that feeling. Yeah.
But I appreciate that feeling too. But it's a lot of work to get a very small emotional, like, a emotion unit. And I go back to, and this is the thing we talk about all the time, I go back to, stories are intellectual, but they are also about emotional training. And this game at times really loses the thread with that. Like, it really loses the thread. Especially
the score
at the
is end. Highly evocative of emotion, which covers over some of those gaps. Like, you'll just feel emotional. You'll just feel melancholy because the soundtrack is just getting you there.
That way because I'm not always as impressionable to the music when it's the same music for long extended periods of time.
When you keyed into the music, did you think it was good or do you not like the soundtrack?
I like the soundtrack quite a bit. Again, these are high level critiques. Like, I don't want to make it sound like this is the most. This is everything I felt about the game. It absolutely isn't. But the game ends with this stuff. Like this geopolitical like conversation stuff ends up being more important than I think it should have been. Like, I'm much more interested in like the tale of the unions in the town and like the tale of the damsel in distress, like the femme fatale character, whose name just zapped right out of my head.
Miss Aranha.
Yeah, I'm way more interested.
Orange disco dancer.
Yeah, she was great. And even Kim Kitsuragi, right? Isn't that his name? Kitsuragi, is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
His connection to his department and yours, like him trying to figure out his place in that world. Those things are interesting to me because they have more given emotional value. Like some old like communist who didn't die in a war that isn't the present tense of this fake world diatribing about how communism mattered and he lost his place as the reason for all of this is just so obtuse that I'm like, no, man, that's very unsatisfying. And couple it with, as a video game player, I want to choose options that allow me to get A story or B story or C story. Nothing you choose matters. It does not matter at the end. You know?
And is that not how these go? Forget it, Jake. It's Chinatown.
That's a movie, though, right? That's a movie.
You're just saying the nature of it as an interactive toy makes you want to.
Correct.
But see, I felt that my... So that's... It's interesting because... And I think this is the best praise I can give if you've listened to this whole podcast. The writing in this is so much better than the writing in a Fallout game.
100%. Yeah, it really is.
And the writing in the Fallout games is my favorite video game writing till I played Disco Elysium and it was like, oh, never mind. This is real writing like you would read in a book. Like real writing.
Yeah, this is incredible texture, sentiment,
and voice acting is off the charts.
It's really, really good. It's so good that like everything negative I've said so far is vastly outweighed by how good the writing is. Vastly outweighed.
But I guess, and it could come down to taste, but I wonder if it does or if it comes down to how we interpreted various key moments. Because unlike Fallout, where, yes, my choices will affect literally the state of the universe at the end of a Fallout game can be one of 4 to 6 game states, and it's determined by my choices. In this game, only subtle implications change. Like, it's always going to end with you interacting with the cryptid, and then this guy did it. He is arrested. You solve the case, and you feel something about your ex-wife. Now, the details of what you feel about your ex-wife can be altered. Whether you understand what the cryptid is doing can be altered. Whether you get a photo of the cryptid or not successfully can be altered.
Right.
But nothing else can be altered. You find out who did it, and you get him. The end.
Yeah, he either dies or arrested. I see, like, the other thing is the ex-wife
Those are notable differences. He dies or gets arrested.
They are. Yeah, completely.
But I guess what I would say is, I felt that my choices mattered based on all the stuff that happened in the middle. It wasn't so much in the ending, but I would much rather have that than like Mass Effect 3, where it's like, your choices matter. And then at the end, all that
it's
either red or green or blue.
Right.
And it's like, who gives a shit? Whereas this, I was constantly like, oh no, that guy thinks I'm a homophobe now because I said something that I thought I was just being curious, but he felt judged.
But nobody criticizes Mass Effect 3 for the choices that you make along the way that dramatically affect the characters you've been with for 3 games. They criticize it because the ending that was supposed to be this like nuanced thing ended up being this cookie cutter thing. And to me, your defense, and forgive me, I'm gonna dial the intensity down. I'm taking your defense to say, yeah, so it's better if you don't make a choice at all than make a bad or meaningless choice. And I think, no, I would rather have a Mass Effect 3 choice than no choice at all, where things didn't build to anything, which is what happened here. And we've belabored this, so I don't want to spend the entire conversation with this game on that.
I thought it built to the thing I said about the cryptid, which is beautiful to me.
No, but I mean, my choices did not build to anything. That's what I'm not talking about narratively did it build.
No, your choices affect what story chunks you get, but not the nature of the chunks themselves. The story is written in stone. Your choices in this game affect how much of it you perceive in what order.
And even that in a very vague way. I feel like anybody who was...
No, but like, no, there are major changes. Like, for example, there. I'm just saying, in the middle,
yeah,
in the, I've done
right,
a lot of research. I've now played through the game 3 times. You can really experience things in a wildly different order from a wildly different perspective.
I believe that.
But
completely.
The constant is, if you see the game through to its conclusion, you always solve the case and go home. And I would argue that... What else did you want to happen in a detective story? You got to solve the case and go home.
Well, I would say that if the game decided it was going to land in a place where there were multiple explanations, they could have had more explanations and they could have opened the field to which ones you get.
I guess that's true. I just feel like a story that's so well told, you want that control.
Well,
you don't want it to end in a random way because the story is so well told that it can only end one way because...
I don't know what you mean by random, given what the ending is. I don't know what you mean by that, because, like, to me, this is random in the sense that nothing was related to it, except for the cryptid piece. That's the piece that made me go, wow. But,
to me, the climax of the story is the cryptid and all that it represents in terms of you. I mean, to me, the cryptid represents hope, or the idea that humanity could one day live collaboratively in peace. It's something that's so unlikely that you kind of suspect it doesn't even exist, and yet you glimpsed it. And yet you'll never know if the needless death that happened was because of the... You know what I mean? Like, obviously the stick creature represents the goal of structuring power in a fair way. I think that's what it represented to me.
I think
anyway.
It's pretty tough to get a really clear implied or intended message from the cryptid.
Well, if it was just a bunch of random imagery in a row, I like it less. But all I can say is I played the same game and it seemed meaningful to me. I drew things out of it.
That was the rare time where, again, so forgive me, I don't want to spend all 50 minutes on this, but like that was the rare time where... I did have like a really like excited emotional response to that fact happening. It was like, wow, this is really cool, because it did kind of all feel connected. Like, I enjoyed that.
The cryptid is the hope that we'll ever have another beautiful moment again. It's just the hope that we'll,
I think
that
it,
something
it,
good will happen.
And it's also the hope that there is more that we don't understand. Like, there's the hope of mystery, like in the mysterious land, you know, is...
I think there's... It's very intentional that one of the things you can graffiti on the wall is something beautiful is going to happen.
Right.
I think the game is about being very cynical, thinking that humanity probably isn't worth the trouble, but deep down you can't let go of that spark of hope that maybe we will someday redeem ourselves and do something
good. And I love
good.
That. Like, I really, really
I love
that
theme.
So,
yeah.
Me too. If it had been a movie, if this exact thing had been a movie, I would be like, wow, this is a really great movie. Honestly, I really would have felt that way. It's not. It's a game. And because of that, the experience of my choices were undervalued and didn't matter. And they were very frustrating at the end when I had to listen to a 30-minute nonsense diatribe from a character I don't care about from left field who means nothing to me. It's talking about things that mean nothing to me. Or mean very little to me. Not nothing, but very little.
But did you not get... So, like, it is derivative of The Stranger, but... I do find the scenario compelling of someone who could have killed anyone at any time and they randomly killed this one person this time, this day. Why? Why this day? We'll never really know. Life is so full of random factors.
I think a lot of people find
that an interesting thought experiment.
I think a lot of people like to romanticize chaos. Or which is, this game really flirts with that. And I don't mind it per se.
Oh, it does. I mean, the biggest swing in the whole game, I think, is the fact that rather than being set on a planet, it's set on these series of islands with pale.
Which
between
I really
them.
Liked. Yeah.
And pale represents just chaos and entropy, the soup of, well, it just fucks your shit up and it's slowly encroaching on reality.
And that's when I start to feel like I feel the same way that I feel about the. What's the name of that movie that the Coen brothers did? the Job story.
Serious Man.
Serious Man. I know you really like that movie. I really dislike that movie.
Because it's intentionally obtuse?
Not only is it intentionally obtuse, it's cruel. The filmmakers are cruel and saying, this is what life is. And I'm like, no, this is what you are. Like, life can be a lot of things, and that's not the only thing it can be. And, like, you're the guy who put the tornado in this guy's path. Like, life didn't do that. You did. So, like, it's hard to... I don't see that as, like, the way to... The only way or the most obvious way to view life. Like, I disagree with that. And, you know, that's getting into, like, very deep beliefs. But so I'm naturally going to react to, oh, so it's random third, like, left field guy who's not related to anything, who then is going to go on a big, long diatribe that I don't care about. I've said this 5 times now. That's not enjoyable to me. I did not enjoy that as, like, a visceral experience because that's not poignant to me. That's, at best, preachy. At worst, bad writing. You know, like, the cryptid is a redemptive piece of it. And I'm not saying this writing on a... Again, I'm saying the writing is excellent. The choice-making is excellent until the end, which I did not like. And I'll say this as a defense for it for the people who are going to be instantly outraged. Everyone who was watching it with me on stream was also very bummed out while we were watching it. We were all bummed out by the ending. It was like, this sucks. You know, so I don't know. I mean, like, and there is something to being let down. Like, that can be a narrative choice. And it's daring in some ways. And this game's very daring. But, yeah.
Or especially, I like a narrative that calls you out for knowing what you want and gives you something else.
I like that,
but in
too.
In a way where you can tell they knew what you wanted. They gave you something else on purpose to make you feel weird. I like
but
that.
But to me, it's like anybody who was mad about Mass Effect's ending not being enough... I can't understand how you can be mad about that and not mad about this ending. Like
because this ending completely wrapped up all the threads of a very convoluted detective story in a satisfying way.
Well, I just totally don't disagree understand with that. What was it, not in a satisfying way. It did wrap them
you
up.
You find out who did it and why.
Yeah, but they don't matter to what you did, which is the key ingredient to a video game story.
So would it, you think, or I'm just asking, would it have improved it if you had met him before in the course
if
of
I'd
the game?
If I'd had any interaction
than
with him.
Being out of left field.
That would have helped.
That I buy that. Or I understand the structural flaw you're describing now.
And that, right. Yes. Okay, good. So at least we understand each other.
It's a deus ex machina of the who did it.
Yes.
You're like, there's
like,
no way I could have foreseen that.
Yes.
Because he just appeared at the end and said, I did.
Because one of the fun things about a detective story is trying to figure it out. And this game took that away from you at the end, which is
interesting.
Honestly, it's not the worst thing in the world.
That's true. I at some point abdicated. I guess I didn't expect it was carrying me along in such an inward, emotional, psychological way that I abandoned myself to the story and no longer I didn't care about who did it. Long before I found out who did it, I was just going, just give me more of this dialogue.
Yeah.
I love every second of this. And I don't actually really, I guess I didn't put much weight on it wrapping up satisfyingly. It had already earned my love by then. Does that make sense?
100%. And
so I'm probably going too easy on the ending because I'm like, man, by then I was like, whatever
you earned it.
Did a good job.
Victory lap. Yeah. I completely agree. And I'm being extra hard on this game. Because
it's so good.
Because it's so good, right. It's really good, and I know we haven't spent enough time talking about that, so let's do that.
Well, I just want to say again something I don't think we've touched on enough is, like, the visual art cannot even be described.
It's so
without
good.
You,
yeah,
you have
I really
to
like
see
it.
It.
Yeah.
It's like Joseph Turner, or like, okay, so the specific, it's a different style of art from all the other art in the game, but the pencil drawings that represent the things in your thought cabinet are so fucking trippy and good.
They really
are.
You
know what
are.
I mean? Like, the faces that are melting and stuff.
They're almost like Garbage Pail Kids type style drawings. Like, they're almost like that, but they still have kind of a more artistic vibe. This game is such a cohesive visual and sonic thing that I've never seen any other place. I've seen all the elements some other place, but this collection of things feels unique and original, and that's it alone very exciting.
By the way,
I hate these kinds of games. Points and clicks.
I didn't I didn't expect this to be your game at all, or I expected you to hate
it. I don't like point and click games. I don't like games where, I mean, again, this game took most of the interactivity out, and I still very much enjoyed it all the way through. Even with my disappointment with the ending, I still very much enjoyed it. So that tells you a lot about how good of a ride it is.
Did you see that someone made it and made a demake of it in as a Game Boy game?
No, that's incredible though. I would probably enjoy that.
Yeah, there's a fully playable version of it on as a Game Boy level.
That's funny.
And shit.
That's really funny. Any particular people in the story that really wounded your soul or got you, you know, or lifted you up aside from Kim?
I think I have a very strong fondness for Everett Clare because I thought he was going to be the Tammany Hall, completely corrupt. And the fact that by the end, all he does is help you and he never betrays you. And he just acts as like he is corrupt.
Yeah.
But his corruption is only rises to the level of corruption he's rationalized to himself is worth the ends justifying the means based on his geopolitical outlook. And the fact that the story had the restraint to use him in that way really tickled me. So I loved Everard. I also thought the actor nailed, like, oh, Harry.
Yeah, he was so good. No. Yeah, I was very so surprised. Good. Like, even his voice was different than I was expecting.
I also really liked the guy who's so wealthy that he bends light. Did you encounter him?
I think I did. Which guy
is he? Outside Everard Clare's office, there's a storage container that you can't seem to get into.
Oh, I didn't get into that. Okay.
If you ever get into it, you have a long conversation with a guy who's so wealthy that the ratio of his wealth to your wealth warps light around him and you can't see his face. Because he's too wealthy. Like, the disparity of wealth between you is too great for you to exist in the same reality.
That's I do like shit like that. This game feels like it was perfectly designed for you. Like, when I was playing, I was like, man, this is such a Mike game. It's like right up your alley.
It's even beyond, like, I thought it was a miracle that a game like Fallout New Vegas ever existed. This is a game I could never even have dreamed would exist. Like, it's so far up my alley. I can't believe, like, the visual references and the art and shit. I'm like, man, this is my, maybe, no, I can't say it. I say it too easily.
It's your favorite game. Yeah, I know. But I knew you were tinker with it in your heart. I completely understood that. And you should, because it definitely, when you're in the middle of this game, it feels very, like, you're so enraptured by it.
It is not, there's a difference between favorite and best, right?
Yeah.
And the reason I say favorite a lot is I'm not as precious about that slot. It gets refreshed from time to time.
Sure.
I could never argue this is the best game because, like you said, it is a point and click. The challenge, or you know what I mean, the sheer accomplishment of other games is on such a massive scale. There's a full 3D environment
right.
with, you know, whole gameplay systems and loops and shit. Disco Elysium is a humble indie offering, but it might be... it might be the best writing in a game.
That's
it's
a contender.
And I don't mean story. I mean sentence to sentence.
Yeah.
You know what I mean.
I don't know if I can pick a better one. Although I think there might be some Tim Schafer work in there somewhere that we haven't thought about. Because it's not as poetic, his work, but it's every bit as profound, I would argue. So my favorite character was... there was a million of them. I loved Kuno after a while. He really started to grow on me.
I love Kuno.
Yeah.
There was also a character that, much to my chagrin, I was glitched in a way where I never got to interact with him, which means I never got my gun back.
I never
met pigs.
Yeah.
You didn't meet pigs?
Didn't.
Yeah.
Couldn't.
That sucked.
Couldn't get my gun back. I was very frustrated by that. So again, all my criticisms of the game, everybody remember it was broken. So, you know, dial my anger down to a 5 instead of a 7 or whatever. So there was a working class woman whose actual name was Anais, I want to say. And you meet her sort of on the docks, or not the docks, but like in the northern area, pretty close to the hotel you're in.
No, you meet her reading books out front of the bookshop.
Oh, is that right? Okay, great. So like, and she's sort of ignoring you and trying to be nice. And you, the way I'm playing with this guy, I kept being like, where's your husband? I kept asking her.
Yeah.
She's like, he's been gone. he's fine. Oh yeah, I think something's wrong. And I'm being like kind of probing, like, are you sure? Seems like something's wrong with him. Are you sure? It seems like he's a missing person. And she starts to get kind of freaked out, you know. Mm-hmm. And like then I felt really bad. I was like, oh, I shouldn't have said all that. So then like an hour or 2 hours or I don't know, 10 hours later, I'm trolling around down in the dock, and I find that dead body. There's another dead body.
Yeah.
And it's him. And first of all, the dead body is a very visceral experience. Both times you encounter one, it's like, wow. And that's surprising to say because it's just a painting. But like the descriptions and like the interactions you have are very grim and upsetting. And then eventually I realized, oh no, this is her husband.
Yeah.
Oh no. And like you have to tell her. You know, and she like, and she takes it like pretty well, and you're like, oh god, this is
That arc is great.
Yeah, that's the kind of storytelling that for me is like so meaningful, because it's just simple and human, and there's irony to it, and there's tragedy in it, you know, and there's so much like that in this game. It's really good.
Yeah. What about the cryptozoologist?
I liked her too. She was like very sweet. But engaging.
Also, I think gave us one of the funniest moments of the game is flipping Garth the double bird and accidentally knocking her wheelchair over.
That was one of my favorite things.
Like, I am so sorry.
Yep. That was really
good. I also love how often the game will say like, right, like you'll jump through the air and it'll be like, oh, you're about to knock the old lady in the wheelchair over. And there will be an option you can click that's like, but I don't want to do that. I don't do that then.
Yeah.
And it goes, it's too late, motherfucker.
Yeah, you did.
And you're like, it's like, but I didn't, the thing I clicked didn't say do that. It just said do something crazy. And it's like, well, this is what you got. And it just, the game has this adversarial.
It does. It tricks
you. Yeah, and that's why I mentioned parts work, which is just the therapeutic methodology that leans heavily into this feeling that we all have that there are different voices in our head, not literally, but right. Like there's a part of you that wanted to do this, but there's a part of you that understands that's unreasonable. And there's a part of you that feels this way because your parents did this here or whatever. And it's, we haven't really dealt with this, but functionally the way the game's like underlying gameplay breaks down is the only real mechanic other than the thought cabinet, I guess, is that you can tweak your dice roll outcomes by bolstering different parts of you.
Like and by outfits.
And different outfits you wear. Esprit de corps is the part of you that feels in touch with the police force. Shivers is the part of you that knows the breath of the city, that like knows the pulse of the streets.
And kind of knows the future a little bit. Like kind of knows what's happening in the future.
Well, esprit de corps, if you boost it enough, makes you psychically linked with the other cops, which is weird.
I mean, I loved the way this game decided those feelings are. Like,
what are the parts of the human psyche? Yes. Let's explicate them. And they picked weird, wild stuff.
As you described so perfectly earlier in the episode, you feel very much like, what does this shit even mean? And not in a bad way, but just in like, you're amused, but also like, this is a pretty obfuscating beginning, gentlemen.
But it's like, you can put a point into volition, or you can put a point into electrochemistry.
And you're like, what are those?
Well, what is good?
What is that?
I don't wish.
And it makes you make pretty big choices right up top. But I do like that's kind of what this game experience is overall. It's like it's incredibly dense right up top, and then it wins you over with comedy and with poignancy. And then after a while, you start to see like, oh, like the structure here is actually really smart. There's a lot to this, and you appreciate what esprit de corps means. You know, like you appreciate volition.
Oh, I really. Was satisfied with the feeling of now I do know what shivers means and I know exactly how to use it and what outcomes will happen from that.
Yeah. I really enjoyed the moment in the game where the brain becomes aware that it's betraying itself when you're interviewing the femme fatale.
Oh, and the brain says, by the way, of the narration, some of the outcomes you've been getting are no longer trustable narrator. Yeah. And you're like, well, fuck.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a great moment.
Yeah, I mean, that's the kind of thing that's like so smart because they've set up a system and they need to undermine it at some point, and they do. Also, there's nothing that can ever, to me, ever diminish the moment in this game where you first see your face in the mirror. And decide.
I was going to ask if you ever shaved.
No.
Did you shave?
No. The description of the expression that you have made me laugh so hard. Like, it was just like pure, brilliant comedy writing and comedy performance, and not in a slapstick way, like in an artistic New Yorker cartoon kind of way. I really enjoyed it, you know?
And that's the image, actually, him in the mirror, that really reminds me of Van Gogh.
Yeah, and it looks very much like that. It's like, it's very funny, but also very sad.
Which is the whole vibe of the whole game.
It really is. There isn't a great comparison to it, because there's a lot more sadness in this game than I've ever seen in a comic, like a comedy thing. But it is like fundamentally pretty funny, you know? And I really like about the game that it very gently but smartly waffles between like the actual historical voice that you're listening to. And by that, I mean, a lot of times you're listening to this excellent narration that describes perfectly the synapses firing in your mind and how they unexpectedly are chartreuse in vibe, like that kind of stuff, right? You get this like really dense prose, and then your choices to how to react to that are very much like 2020 gamer, you know, like, so what? Like your choice is like, so what? You know, and I love that. It's like this interaction between this moment and the artistry of the world. Like, both things are true.
Yeah.
Loved that. I thought it was so good and used to such comic effect. Really enjoyed it.
I am now busy scrolling through Disco Elysium fan art, which, as you might expect, is spectacular.
This is a game that really does deserve to be celebrated by the community that was ready for it, you know? I don't know that... It's like, this is how I feel about like a really good indie film that's not a transcendent film. You know, like, once in a while you see a movie, it's like, man, that was just a really good indie film, and I'm glad it has some fans. Like,
and I would just argue it's even more transcendent given the medium, the fact that it's
that's accurate
a video game.
You know what it reminds me of? It's sort of like the way I feel about Dazed and Confused. You know that movie with Linklater? Like, in this one,
Abe and I reference it all the time when we try to convince ourselves that it is okay to make a movie that's dense like a novel, not just 1, 2, 3, we're out.
Right.
We like movies that are dense like a novel, and when we're working on one, people always give us the feedback, you know, you should really just give your main character a simple want and follow it through. And we always turn to each other and go, but Dazed and Confused did it.
It did. I mean, you know, it's very hard to do, but they did it.
Weaving a whole ensemble in a sort of structured but structureless way appeals to me.
Yeah, right. That's what I mean. This is, again, this property is like perfectly designed for your brain. And, you know, I won't lie to you, like all my training, all my school, all my mind is very much about like laser focus and achieving the objective. That's the kind of person I am. So like this game must be great for it to have been so infectious to a mind like mine. You know, I don't know how else to compliment it. I feel like that is the highest praise I can give it, that it shouldn't appeal to me, but it does.
I didn't expect you to actually like it at all.
And I really did. I really
other
genuinely
than
did.
I expected you to like tip your hat and grant that the writing is good, but I didn't think you would enjoy yourself. I'm so glad
I
you
really
did.
I enjoyed it so much that I didn't do the thing I should do when I play these games in the future, which I will, which is I should have been comfortable not asking every single dialogue option. Like, I think this game...
Yeah, I'm picking, leaning into a style.
Yeah.
It is more fun if you lean into a style. Like, I was Apocalypse Cop.
Okay.
Hard.
I should have done that because I felt very much my video game collector instinct kick in, which is I got to hear every dialogue option. And I kind of regret it because it made me more frustrated with things I didn't want to talk about and I had to. Like, again, I go back to Measurehead because he's like the perfect example of he talks really slow for one thing. And also I don't want to hear about your racist point of view. I don't want to hear it. Like, it's like, I get it, you're racist, box checked. I don't want to listen to this, you know.
And I hate that you can actually bypass that challenge by embracing racism as one of the ways to bypass
and
it. And I'm like, I'm not going to fucking game designer.
But the problem became, because other things were glitched, that it was much
it
easier.
It was the only way to get through.
Yes, it was much easier. And I was like, man, that's very frustrating. I don't want to do that.
I don't want to subscribe mentally to racism to get past this check.
Yeah, and it's not, I mean, it's not even like the moral indignation of, I mean, I guess it actually it is. This is one of the rare times.
It
yeah,
is.
It kind of is.
It's
you're
a,
right.
That's a weird thing for a game to force you into, to say, oh, I check the box. My character is racist. I don't want to be forced to do that.
Right. And it did make you.
Yeah. I, but hey, maybe they're trying to make us reckon with the fact that everyone is racist, no matter how hard they try not.
And that's not totally inaccurate. I think a lot of the things this game's trying to say, it does say. Like, I don't think it's messing up. I think it's really effective at telling what it wants to tell. What do you feel like? Do you feel like we've exhausted this topic, or is there something else you want to talk about here?
I think people should play it for themselves.
Definitely. They should play it for themselves.
Probably on PC, where you're guaranteed you can get through it and won't glitch out, because it what a gut punch that
yeah,
is.
Yeah, well, I hear, though, that the console version's the only one that has all the lines acted. And
oh, then I recommend you wait
another couple
until
months.
You've heard this episode, yeah. And then wait 2 or 3 more months, and then play this game on your console.
Yeah, because the voice acting adds a lot, especially the voices for your internal monologue. That guy is a champion.
Phenomenal.
He is a,
yeah.
He whatever awards there are for what he does, give it to him. He deserves it.
Drag him.
Yeah, he's great. So should we pass our final checkpoint?
Let's do
have
it.
Have we, you know, has the cryptid finally spoken to our consciousness? Have we captured a photo proving its existence?
It's fragile, beautiful, and intoxicating, like the promise of hoping in anything. It works so well. I'm coming around, though. There could have been a better person who ultimately did it. That is
true. I don't mind anything that happens from the cryptid on. I like everything that happens basically from the cryptid on.
But that part on the island where you're really just rushing to get to know this guy because he did it, so you better find out his deal. Yeah. Is kind of clunky. I see that.
And
now.
Also, it also was very, very long. Like, it was like a 20, 30 minute listen to this guy talk. That is a long time.
Oh, and I hear the dream that you're supposed to have by sleeping on the island is really amazing. And I didn't get to have that either. That was glitched.
Yeah, I didn't have that. So, you know, that's an issue.
I heard that was like a beat that is leading to the cryptid beat that's supposed to be really impactful. It's like the dream with the hanged man. And I'm like, I'm so upset I didn't get that chocolate.
Yep.
Yeah.
Me too.
Anyway,
I may play this game one day. Like, I could see in like 5 years, you know, depending on how life is going. Being like, maybe it's time to go back to Revachol. I could totally see that.
In Martinez.
Because I loved Kim. Oh, boy.
And
I loved him.
I'd really love... I mean, I'm definitely going to be excitedly looking for whatever Zaum Studios makes next. That's
They've
for
earned
sure.
a free buy. Whatever it is, free purchase from this guy. So,
because you can tell they're tryhards at the very least.
So keep or delete, my friend.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey guys, I'm home.
Everyone knows that it's Dad's job to be a bit of a joker.
Sorry I'm late, everyone. There was an accident at the factory. Monty fell into the upholstery machine. Don't worry, though. He's fully recovered.
Good one, Dad.
Did you get the pizza for dinner?
So he likes to keep everyone happy with some dad jokes.
Yep, right here. I had a coupon, and it saved me a lot of dough.
Well, the truth is, Dad is just a fun guy.
Hey, I'm not a mushroom.
Please stop. Where does he get these stupid jokes from?
He listens to the Daily Dad Jokes podcast.
Oh, great. More dad jokes for me.
We've delivered over 15,000 jokes to over 3 million listeners, and man, the postage fees are killing us. Listen to the Daily Dad Jokes podcast every day on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robey,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
Thank you for taking the light, and you're going to shine it all over the world, and it makes me really happy.
I never imagined that I would get the chance to carry this honor and help be a part of this legacy.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
Yeah. Do you want me to go first?
Yeah, go first.
I'm deleting it. Because of the
no, I have to keep it because despite its imperfections, I would send it to the aliens proudly and being like, this is art, motherfuckers. If you don't like this, then destroy us. But I'm strongly it is not okay. It literally I was incensed. It's not okay that the port was that broken. It really is not
acceptable.
It was
a huge problem. Mike and I rarely talk about what we're going to say on the episode before we do this, mm-hmm. because we like to have fresh interactions. We had about a 3-minute conversation about Disco Elysium in private, and we both got very upset about the port, and we're like we were both afraid that we were going to both delete it because of the port. That's how bad it was.
And I think you're my anchor. You give me license to soar. The fact that you deleted it, the point has been made. The port sucked. I'll keep it to balance out the yin yang.
I'm not lying to you. That's why I went first, so that you would keep it. Because I don't think it deserves to be double deleted. I really don't. But
it would have been weird for us to cover it just to double delete it. People would be like, why didn't you just leave Disco Elysium alone?
No. There has to be games where we double delete. We're not just going to cover the top 300 games, I'm okay with a double delete, but not for this game. Not for this game.
No, it doesn't deserve that kind of snub.
No, it's a beautiful game. Don't take my delete as being saying that it's not quality. Please, please don't. Like, treat yourself to this. And
he's just a sober realist. He's got to call it like
I want to push. To me, it's two things. I want my choices in a video game story to feel like they are impactful, and this game removed that from me, and I didn't enjoy it because of that. I didn't enjoy the end because of that, and it was such a visceral not enjoyment that it kind of spoiled the experience for me. That and the port are the two reasons.
Yeah.
If again, even if it had been Mass Effect 3's ending, which I don't hate as much as most people do, I would have been like, great game. You know?
And as I said, it felt exactly like watching one of the better movies you've ever seen, but they push you out before you get to see the ending. It was still a very good movie, or I wouldn't have been so invested, so I'll keep it. But it really sucked, that ending part.
So, I mean, that is to say that...
And in fact, it probably felt less tedious to me because I watched it on YouTube, if you know what I mean. The part with that guy, the guy's half-hour diatribe... I think I actually skipped through by clicking ahead. You know what I mean?
So, yeah.
Like, I skimmed the last hour or two because I wasn't playing it. I was watching
it. I was streaming it in real time. And it was a bummer. You know, it was a bummer.
Mine was literally glitched to the point that you could not get to the last leg of the journey.
Well, we've done that. What a beautiful work. Loved Revachol. I wouldn't even be bummed to hear there was a second game like this. I would not be bummed to hear that.
I'd be interested in exploring more of Martinez. Yeah.
I would love to.
I was hoping we were going to get to see Jamrock.
Yeah, because they kept talking about it.
Here's a compliment. I'm very particular about the art I hang on my walls in my home. I would totally hang up a full-size poster of the world map of... this game. Like, the fact that it's all interconnected and is essentially one big painting is beautiful.
That would be such a cool, like, in your hallway gigantic painting kind of thing.
Totally.
It'd be really awesome.
Someone get on that.
Like, you know how most of us have like fucking movie posters or whatever on our walls, like assholes? This is such a cooler thing to indicate your love for the medium. Just like my love for you, my friend, which continues on through Disco Elysium.
Well,
you have
a big tapestry of me on your wall.
I do.
Right? You didn't take down the tapestry.
No, it's an oil painting. You know, like okay. I'm trying to get a price for it. Really, buddy.
Good app.
Very good.
I just found a 10,000 pixel wide a poster of the Disco Elysium world map all stitched together. I might try and go get this printed somewhere.
Sounds like you got a weekend ahead of yourself here.
Yeah.
Sounds like you got a weekend. And I don't mind if this stays in the episode, but you're going to be an in-person boy soon, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah, dude.
That's going to be... what I went to a movie theater for the first time in a year and change.
I still haven't done that.
I saw Nobody. It was the best movie ever made.
Because of the theatrical experience. I really want to go to a movie theater. I want to go to a museum of any kind. Doesn't matter what. There's a few things like that I'm eager to do. But I'm getting my second shot in 2 weeks. Beautiful. So. In 4 weeks, I'll be bugging you.
And I'm ready to be bugged.
Yeah.
Much love to you, and much love to those of you who stuck around for all this.
Hey, thanks for listening, y'all.
Work complete.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey fam, I'm Simone Boyce.
I'm Danielle Robay.
And we're the hosts of The Bright Side, the podcast from Hello Sunshine that's guaranteed to light up your day.
Like our recent episode with sisters Regina and Raina King about the why behind their production company, Royal Ties.
We have such a huge love for storytelling without walls, without barriers.
Listen to The Bright Side from Hello Sunshine on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, from Wonder Media Network, I'm Jenny Kaplan, host of Womanica, a daily podcast that introduces you to the fascinating lives of women history has forgotten. We've always been intrigued by stories of disappearances, whether it's a fraudster from the 17th century who kept evading the authorities, or a novelist who taunted the Nazis and faked her own death. We all want to know, what happened next? To find out, listen to Womanica on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.